WUSB, Stony Brook, 90.1 FM. Welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the next interesting hour. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which is what all of us really do want deep down. Well, here we are, suddenly plunged into a world where COVID-19 or the novel coronavirus is sending our society into a tailspin. The virus is having an enormous impact on human health. It's thrown our economy into a recession, has caused the loss of trillions of dollars in the stock market, and has even caused some straining of international relations. On the other hand, it's created the need to work together. And all of this is the result of perhaps one wild animal being caught and eaten by someone in China. Okay? The result of one wild animal being caught and eaten by someone in China. According to the New York Times, and I quote, President Xi Jinping of China fumed at top officials last month. He said, "We can't be indifferent anymore," referring to the public health risks of eating wildlife. On February 24th, the 13th National People's Congress issued a decision comprehensively prohibiting the illegal trade of wild animals, eliminating the bad habits of wild animal consumption, and protecting the health and safety of the people. This and an earlier ban on wildlife markets were direct responses to concerns that the new coronavirus, which is thought to have originated in bats, or it might have been an animal, we'll talk about that in a moment, may have been transmitted to humans via a wild animal for sale at a wet market in Wuhan, a city in central China. Still quoting the New York Times, genetic analysis have come up short of pinpointing the culprit so far, but among the prime suspects is the pangolin, a long-snouted, scaly, ant-eating mammal virtually unknown in the West, but widely prized in China as a delicacy and for its purported medicinal virtues. And because of its perceived value, these animals are virtually extinct in China and being poached to extinction in other countries. Now, on suspicion that it might have infected humans with COVID-19, the pangolin will be spared or protected. Or at least that's what authorities are saying. Because China has had wildlife bans on the books for 3 decades, but those haven't prevented pangolins from being the most trafficked mammal in the world. And they are beautiful animals, if you haven't seen a picture of them. Now, I read that quote since it will be the launching grounds for my discussion this evening with our guest, Dr. Salish Rao. He's the founder and executive director of Climate Healers, a nonprofit dedicated towards healing the Earth's climate. a systems specialist with a PhD in electrical engineering from Stanford University, Dr. Rao worked on the internet communications infrastructure for 20 years. In 2006, however, he switched careers and became deeply immersed full-time in solving the environmental crisis affecting humanity. Dr. Rao is the author of two books, Carbon Dharma, The Occupation of Butterflies, and Carbon Yoga, The Vegan Metamorphosis. He's also an executive producer of four documentaries, some of which you've heard of for sure in this audience, The Human Experiment, Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret, What the Health, and A Prayer for Compassion. We've shown the Cowspiracy and What the Health movies at Healthy Planet events. So welcome to the Healthy Planet radio program, Dr. Rao.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob.
Dr. Rao, you were steeped in the world of high-tech internet connections for decades. In fact, you were one of the people that was around in the early times of the internet, if I'm not mistaken. Upon hearing that, a lot of people will laugh because they have heard Al Gore claiming that he invented the internet, or at least that's how the story is said. So talk about what that world was like and what had you transform to one that was devoted to healing the earth and healing the climate.
Yeah, I was in the beginning when we were discussing how to transform the internet from analog to digital. So internet was around for a couple of decades before I really got involved, but it was mainly analog connections.
Okay.
And so in 1996, I proposed that we convert it from analog to digital, and we came up with a method to do that. And it became a standard in 1999, and then the internet just took off in 2003. You know, we were selling 150 million units a year, and people were saying, I cannot live without the internet.
You know, so yeah, that was well before I was using the internet.
Right. So I was at beginning of that revolution.
Right.
And I watched that revolution happen. And at that time, in 96, people were saying, you know, who needs this? Who's going to read things on the internet? Who's going to buy stuff on the internet? It's not going to go anywhere, right? So, yeah. But you saw the massive shift in society that the internet brought about. And then I happened to see Al Gore's presentation on TV in 2006, in 2005 December, actually. And I was so shocked. I told my wife, if half of what he's saying is true, then we should be working on the environment full time, not making things faster for the internet. So I decided to study the problem because I'm a systems specialist. So I looked at it from a systems perspective. Mm. And I realized it's a far worse than what Mr. Gore was saying. And it was the most challenging systems problem that he could possibly imagine, right? And so I decided to close my company and work on this full time. And that's what I've been doing for the last 13 years.
Fantastic. Know,
working on systems aspect of how do you solve the environmental problems.
Right.
And in that context, you know, I mean, this whole thing is, I mean, you mentioned my two books, Carbon Dharma, The Occupation of Butterflies. So I use the analogy of the caterpillar turning to the butterfly as what I see happening in the environment, and what I see happening in human interaction with the environment. We are like a caterpillar right now. We are really consuming, and we are getting to be so big that the Earth cannot support us anymore. We're too big for the planet, right? So at that point, the caterpillar usually stops and builds a cocoon around himself, and then he starts meditating, right? He meditates for a week. And inside the caterpillar, all the cells, you know, become imaginal cells. And they start thinking about what will they be when it becomes a butterfly. And so then the various organs of the butterfly are born within the cocoon. So then when the butterfly is born, the butterfly is a very discriminating consumer. She only sips nectar from the flowers. And in the process, she pollinates the flowers and regenerates life, undoing the damage that happened in the caterpillar phase.
Hmm.
And I see what the coronavirus is doing now as putting us into the cocoon of the caterpillar, saying you're done with your consumption. Now you have to think. You know, it's just stay put in one place and think. So the whole economic paradigm is going to have to shift, because it cannot be about growth anymore. If you're sitting at home, how are you going to grow the economy? How are you going to go shopping, right? So it's we have to now sit and imagine what would we be like if we got out and interacted with nature again. How can we become butterflies? So we are in the imaginal phase. So I see the coronavirus putting us in the imaginal phase of the caterpillar.
That's nice imagery. And a lot of us who have been in this imagining phase have been here for decades and are looking forward to that moment when there is a transformation of that sort.
Right. Yeah, it is. I mean, we have been called to do it. You know, we have no choice but to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was told, that, in fact, I think there is a story that Isaac Newton was stuck at home during the bubonic plague, and that's when he figured out all of calculus.
Ah, there we go. Now, I'm guessing that you're a technical and science-based person. You've been trained, and you have the respect and understanding for the importance of empirical data in all kinds of things, whether it's the internet or determining how the systems of our planet and our energy use and our diet are going to work. And so, given that that's been clearly missing in our government, that look at the empirical, especially in the last few years, it must be a challenge for you. But I guess you feel probably even more called to be active at a time like this.
Yeah, you know, I'm an engineer, and I consider engineering to be the application of science. And when we apply science, we have to be absolutely true to what reality is telling us. Otherwise, whatever we are building does not work. Right? If we pretend something is true when it isn't, or something isn't true when it is,
it just doesn't work.
Whatever we are building doesn't work. So we are stuck with having to deal with the truth. You know, so engineers, I think, are a special breed of scientists, because we are forced to do that. So this is why when I see people saying something that I know is not true, or saying that I know that they probably know in the back of their minds that they're not telling the truth and that whatever they're doing will not work. And I think that's fundamentally the problem we have in society at the moment. This is what I've discovered, is that we say something. We say all men are created equal, for instance, right? And then we implement the most unequal society in human history. And when that happens, as an engineer, I know that there's something about reality that we did not get right.
Yeah.
And if we only implemented it right, we would be implementing what we said we were going to implement, which is all men are created equal, a society that's equal, a society in which, you know, we all have the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? So when we implement something and base it on the truth, we will get there. But when we base it on, you know, mass delusions, we won't get there. So we'll be doing the opposite of what we said we were going to do.
Right.
And this is, I think, what we are being forced to confront right now. You know, confront the reality of what you're doing. So we kill animals, and as a result of that, we got this virus. Now, if we pretend, you know, that eating animal foods or, you know, our irresponsible treatment of animals has nothing to do with this, and we continue to do that, then we're going to get another one. So it's like nature is always going to give us the consequences for our actions. Right? Nature is like implementing. Nature is the perfect engineer. She implements physics, chemistry, and biology, you know, exactly.
Exactly. It's defined.
You cannot fool her at all, right?
Right.
It's like the ultimate engineer.
The truth of what is.
Exactly, yeah. So this is, I think, what we are being asked to confront, you know, our own delusions.
Yeah.
So when we face up to it, I think we can easily sort this out. We have a way out.
Yeah. And here we've got obviously a challenge, which is the COVID-19 coronavirus. And we're seeing that it's been covered so extensively on the news with 24/7 coverage on just about every station. And most of the people who get coronavirus will not have any kind of serious symptoms. So we're not talking about a disease that's going to wipe out our entire population. However, there is a population of those who have underlying health conditions, and there are the elderly for whom this disease can, in fact, lead to serious illness and death. So as you may have heard in Democracy Now! Just now, it's the young people who need to look out for the old people in not transmitting this disease and not mingling so much at this time. And you know, right now, there are about 5,000 deaths worldwide, and it's spreading pretty rapidly across the globe. And the aim of the measures that our government is taking is not in hopes of wiping out the disease, but to slow the spread. And apparently the problem is that if we do not slow the spread, many countries will not have enough hospital beds, not enough intensive care units to handle all the cases that would arise if it spreads so quickly. So they're telling people to social distance. So if the spread is successfully slowed, those people who need care will be able to get it when they need it. Now, I know that you've spoken about social distancing and better hygiene. And what's your perspective on those two recommendations as the appropriate response to what is now a pandemic?
Yeah, it is something that we need to do to slow the spread so that we don't overwhelm our hospital systems. But just looking at the numbers and looking at the exponential growth of the virus and the spread of the virus, it is anyway going to overwhelm our hospital systems within the next month or so, from what I could see, right? Just looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
And that being the case, we have to say, okay, whatever we do, social distancing, quarantining people, are we continuing the same old system? Or are we reimagining how we interact with each other? What kind of economic systems we have? So it gives us a chance, just like Newton had a chance to think of calculus during the bubonic plague. We have a chance to now imagine what our systems should look like if we are to live in harmony with the earth, if we are not going around causing pandemics unnecessarily, right? Unnecessarily going and eating animals. Why would you do that if it's going to cause another pandemic? So we have to imagine, what does a vegan world look like? What does a world in which we don't hurt animals unnecessarily look like? And what kind of system should we put in place to help each other thrive in such a vegan world? So it gives us an opportunity to imagine that.
Right, yeah. Now. So we're able to step back for a little bit, you're saying. It's the pause. It's Newton's pause.
Exactly. It's Newton's pause. It's a collective pause that we are being given.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity for, and at the same time, we do have the internet that allows us to connect with each other. See, during Newton's days, when you're quarantined.
That's true. We're still very much connected.
We can get on Zoom. Yeah, we're very much connected, and we can still talk to each other. We can hook up with each other and figure out what kind of systems are we going to implement in place of what we have today.
Right.
Because clearly it's dysfunctional, what we have today. You know, and we have to come together as a species. And across all national boundaries, religious boundaries, all kinds of boundaries. We need to break all those boundaries down and see how we come together as a species, not just to save ourselves, but to save all the animals. I mean, wild animals gave us this this disease. But, you know, we have killed 85% to 90% of the wild animals already. We've killed them. In terms of their total biomass, they're down by 85 to 90% in most cases.
Hard to believe.
They're only very few left. And so they're waking us up saying, you cannot continue doing this. At some point, you're going to kill yourself, which is literally what this is, right?
Yeah. Yep. If you can see a case of cause and effect or reaping what you sow, this is it. And there are many examples of that in our society, all the environmental problems we're facing as the result of our activities. And with all the intense coverage of the coronavirus, I haven't seen any discussion about the human activity that not only likely caused this disease, but according to the CDC, are responsible for 3 out of 4 new or emerging diseases in humans. And I'll repeat that. And you've mentioned it a few times that the cause of the coronavirus is, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, responsible for 75% of all new or emerging diseases in humans. The cause of the coronavirus is responsible for 75% of all new or emerging diseases in humans. In addition to coronavirus, you know, you could think SARS, MERS, CJD, which is Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, mad cow disease, and so many more. And yet I bet, before you mentioned it, that most of our listeners could not mention the broad activity that is resulting in all of these serious diseases, 3 out of 4 of them. And Dr. Rao, the way you put it, it's the result of humans' continued exploitation of animals. So explain that mechanism and talk about the pretty much never discussed but powerful impact of zoonotic diseases on human health.
Right. So zoonotic diseases are diseases that jump from animals to human beings. And every time someone goes and buys an animal product, it does not necessarily have to be food. It could be shoes, leather shoes, or leather jackets, or something like that, or you know, cosmetics that have animal matter in them. So anytime we buy an animal product, it sets in motion a series of events that results in some other human being going and exploiting another animal for the replacement product, okay, to replace the product that he just bought. So in that process, a human being is interacting with an animal, and that is a point at which a disease can be transmitted back to the human being. So every zoonotic disease is caused by a human interaction with an animal. And right now, we kill 75 billion animals per year, land animals per year, just for our food. And then we skin them, and we take their skin and use it for shoes. We take their bones, and, you know, I mean, we have an entire industry set around exploiting animals, the animal agriculture industry. And all along the chain in this industry, there are human beings interacting with animals. And then we have these ships that go out into the ocean, and they catch all these fishes, and they're killing them. So that's another 1 to 3 trillion animals that we kill every year, okay, to exploit them for food, for various purposes. And that's in addition to the wildlife trade. The wildlife trade is where people are catching wild animals and then selling them as exotic pets or selling them for food in the wet markets of China and Asia. So this particular disease came from a wet market like that. But all the other diseases that you mentioned, they came from other animals and other, you know, animal agriculture. There was swine flu, there was bird flu, all kinds of diseases that we have encountered. Now, if we just had a completely vegan economy where we didn't have to do this, then the interaction between human beings and animals will drop by an order of magnitude, if not 2 orders of magnitude. We won't have to go and kill them. We won't have to go catch them and slice their throats all the time, right? We won't have millions of people doing that all the time. So then the number of diseases that we get from animals will drop. Okay? And so imagine right now we get a zoonotic disease that's like a pandemic, maybe once every century, let's say. Let's say the last one was Spanish flu, right? That's during World War I. So now you're getting once every 100 years a pandemic. Now, if you just reduce it by an order of magnitude or 2 orders of magnitude, you'll be getting one every 10,000 years or 1,000 years. And, you know, so it's much easier for us to manage our lives if we didn't have to encounter these so constantly.
Yeah.
So this is why I think it's important for people to understand that every time we buy an animal product, we are potentially causing another zoonotic disease to transmit. And why take that risk unnecessarily? This is the message that the coronavirus, novel coronavirus, is giving us. Don't take risks like that anymore.
So you say not to do it, since our interaction with the animals causes these diseases. So talk about the ways that humans can live without those interactions.
So then we'll have a complete, you know, entirely plant-based economy, a vegan economy, right? Because everything we need from animals, we can actually get from plants as well, directly, without having to go through the animals. So it's the domination of animals that is actually causing the domination of one race over another, or the male over the female. Mm. It's a domination-based paradigm, and it starts with the domination over animals. Right? So to create a completely vegan economy, it's an economy in which social justice is already built in. Equality is already built in, because you're not, you don't have to dominate anyone to make this happen. So, so imagining a system in which all the social justice issues are solved, okay, and animals are not being exploited. That's an economy that I want to live in. That's an economy that I want to design. That's an economy that I want to give as a legacy, you know, for my children and my grandchild.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? So this is, we have a responsibility, I think, in my generation, to imagine such an economy, to imagine such a society, and put everything in place for that society to emerge from this phase, enforced cocoon phase that we are in, where Italy is in lockdown, China is in lockdown. Pretty soon, I mean, odds are within a couple of weeks, three, four weeks, U.S. has also been in a lockdown.
Yeah.
So when we are sitting here at home, let's get together on Zoom, you know, online. Let's get together and figure this out.
Yeah, and
so
certainly
we don't have to come back and do exactly the same thing again and invite the same zoonotic disease again.
Right.
Right.
Now, if it was being discussed that this was in fact the cause of the disease and that this has been the cause of many diseases, we'd have a good chance of being able to reimagine that. I guess the problem is that the people who are in charge are keeping that a pretty tightly held secret. They're not talking about the origins because they don't want to upset the status quo.
Right. Right. But unfortunately for them, the status quo is being upset.
Yeah.
Is being upset. I mean, the airline industry is going down the tubes.
Yeah.
The cruise industry is going, there are lots of industries that are going down the tubes. You can see them. You can watch them. So the entire status quo, there is no way to revive this.
Yeah.
You know, there is no way to revive this and say, let's bring back exactly what we were doing before, but now much bigger. That's not going to happen. I think this particular event is a game changer for our society, for our species.
Yeah. I certainly hope that's the case.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I'll tell you another story. You know, something happened to me when I was living in New Jersey. I built a house, and then I bought a brand new car and parked it in the garage of my house. And the next morning, my car caught fire, and my house was burnt.
Hmm.
Okay? So when I called up the dealer and I said, you know, I saw the car just spitting flames at me. What the hell? What were you selling me? Right? And he said, oh, my God, it happened to you. So I'll give you the number of this engineer, and you can talk to him. So I talked to the engineer, and the engineer said, yeah, you know, we tried to fit a V8 engine inside a V6 compartment. And in the process, we routed the fuel line very close to the windshield washer heater. And so if the fuel line leaks, the fuel accumulates around the heater, and if it's parked in a garage, there is no airflow. So the fuel vapors just accumulate, and then it ignites. And usually it happens when the temperature goes up. And
an example of bad design.
No, it's a bad design. And he said, well, you know, we know we have a problem, and we fixed it starting in May of that year. They had fixed it. All they had to do was to put a sleeve around the fuel line. So if the fuel vapor leaks, it stays inside the sleeve and it doesn't go to the heater, right?
Right.
So we fixed it in May. Yours was manufactured in March. So we haven't recalled your car yet. And headquarters is waiting for 10 cars to catch fire before they issue a recall. Okay? Yours is the 8th car that caught fire. Okay, you have 2 more cars. So I said, okay, you know, that's the way it is. And now it's my bad luck. And I was okay with it. Because it's engineer to engineer. I understand engineering is not 100%, you know, there's nothing that's 100%, right?
Yeah.
It's not perfect. So there are issues like that. So I understand that. So I said, okay. But the next morning, the auto manufacturer sent a professor of physics to examine my fire. And I noticed that he was looking at everything in my garage except the car. He wasn't looking at the car at all. He was looking at other things. I went to him and I said, Professor, why are you looking at all these other things? And I spoke to the engineer. And he told me exactly how it happened. And he said, what? Who gave you that number? You're not supposed to call him. So he went and complained to his people. He said, how can I do my job? He knows everything. He called the guy and talked to him. Right?
Wow.
And so his job was to find an alternate explanation for the fire. Even though internally they already knew, they had chopped it up as car number 8. Okay? So already they knew that this was the problem, but they were waiting for something. They were waiting for 10 cars to catch fire before they say, oh yeah, sorry, we do have a problem. Here is a fix. Right? But until then they were pretending that this was not the cause. And I'm afraid that's exactly what our leaders are doing about animal agriculture. Okay? They know it is a root cause. They know it's a root cause of climate change. They know it's a root cause of biodiversity loss, the root cause of deforestation. The root cause of every known environmental problem is animal agriculture and what we do to the animals. Our relationship with animals is at the heart of it. It's the root cause of this pandemic also. They all know it, but they're pretending not to know it.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. You know, we have a saying in Tamil, you know, where I come from. They say it's possible to wake up someone who is sleeping, but it's impossible to wake up someone who is pretending to be asleep.
That's good.
Yeah, and I see, you know, all of our leaders, our world leaders, are stuck in this mode, but they're pretending not to see it. And our media is pretending not to see it. And I don't know what they're waiting for. I don't know what their 10 cars is, you know?
Yeah.
What is this 10 cars catching fire for them? Is it 1 billion people dying? What is it? What are they waiting for? And I really don't want to know. I say no. I want to work on this new system where we don't have to deal with this, where we can actually face the truth. And we build a system based on the truth. Because I know as an engineer, unless we build a system based on the truth, we will always run into problems. Nothing that you create will actually work according to our spec unless we are facing the truth. Right? That's engineering 101.
That's wisdom 101. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
And isn't it something? I saw the president come and speak on TV on Tuesday night, I think it was, Tuesday or Wednesday night. And he was talking about the various things that people needed to know about coronavirus. And he said some things that weren't true and it wasn't a good showing. But it got me thinking about the power of that office if they were just to use it in that way. What if they came on? What if we had a new president, a president who wasn't pretending to be asleep? And that president outlined on a regular basis for us exactly what was happening with climate change, exactly what was happening with the food that we're eating and the animals that we're eating and the impacts on our environment, on our rainforests, on biodiversity, on sickness and health. What if they were to do that on a regular basis? But we're kind of flying without leadership in that this job of informing the public has been left to people like you and me, which is not a bad thing because there are some great people in this movement who have brought it to a level where the word vegan and hot dogs and burgers and sausages that are not made from animals are now being advertised on TV, are now big IPOs in the stock market. So we have elevated it to this level where I think people are ready to make the next jump, but we're still doing it without leadership. And my take is that they will not be leaders and they will not do this until they have to, until the public sentiment is so strong and the public becomes so aware of it that they're asking, why aren't you doing something? Which I think is also happening with climate change at this point. We're at a really pivotal point with climate change. So I agree. I think we're getting there. We're getting close. And I hope it's with leadership. I hope they kick in with the new president who comes in next year, the beginning of next year.
See, the trouble is the game that they're playing, the money game that they're playing, stops them from saying it. Okay? It's the same thing that, you know, that this professor was. Why was this professor not telling me the truth about the car? Because he was being paid by the car company.
Of course.
And so the car company has told him, of course you cannot say it's the car. If you say it's the car, I'm not going to pay you.
Yeah. Right?
So it's the same thing here, right? The president is being paid by someone. I mean, it's not paid directly, but it is, you know, the re-election campaign funds. And, I mean, who's funding a re-election? Who's funding all the down-ticket elections? So you have to listen to whoever is funding you.
And right.
Otherwise, you don't get the funds anymore. So
of course.
There are people who are trying to get elected without raising any funds from corporations. And they see, you know, billions of dollars being spent against them. So ultimately, it's money, the game of money, that the way we have set up the game is forcing us to tell lies. It is based on lies. It's based on marketing. Marketing is basically lies, right?
Yeah.
You're telling something to tell, convince people to buy it when you know they don't need it.
Whatever they need to hear.
Right, whatever they need to, but that's because of the game of money itself. If you look at, the architecture of the game of money, you begin to see the problem right away. You see, the architecture of the game of money, the way it is set up, the money can only be created by a few banks, okay? And those banks can only create new money in the form of loans. And when they give out those loans, they want the money back from you. So we are all in this. Every day we wake up and we play this game of where does my money come from? And then you say, okay, well, wherever the money comes from, I have to make sure that that person, wherever the money is coming from, that has to be happy with me, whatever I do. So you become a slave to that. And when you become a slave to that, you tell lies to please that entity, whatever that entity is. So we are forced into this game of lying because of the way the game is set up. So if I were to say, you know, what is the one thing we need to change to create a vegan world, a world in which people are telling the truth, I would say it's the game of money. You need to change the rules of the game, the game itself. Okay? The game itself should be such that, you know, I used to work for Bell Labs. My first job was to work for Bell Labs. And Bell Labs was this place where people paid you a salary and then they told you, you can go and play. Do whatever you want. So this is the fixed salary you're going to get. It's not going to get much money, okay, but that's enough for you to live on. But you can do whatever you want, and we'll support you. So, and it was the most fun I ever had in a job.
Wow. You know?
Because I could play. And this is what money should be. Money should be a game that makes sure that each one of us is supported to the extent that we are all, you know, that we are eating well, living well, okay? And then we are told to go and play. Do whatever you want. Be creative. And these are all the things that need to get done. How will you contribute? We need to clean up the ocean. We need to replant all these forests. We need to bring back all these animals. You know, so these are all the little tasks that need to be done in that context. How would you contribute? And I bet you that people would love to contribute.
I bet you're right.
We all want to contribute. You know, anyone. You know, even you know, look at my granddaughter. She wants to come and do things that if I paid someone, they wouldn't want to do. She wants to come and sweep the floor and mop the floor because she wants to be part of a larger community.
Sure. Sure.
So I think we have that within us. You know, we are a very social species. And so we have the inner drive to be contributors. And so this is why I think the game of money can be changed in such a way that makes all of us happy, and at the same time does productive things for the planet.
Right.
Right now we don't have the money to clean up the ocean because no one wants to put money into that. Right?
Sure.
We have these huge landfills all over the place and no one's looking at what to do with that.
True.
So we have plastic waste all over the place and no one knows what to do with that.
There's no incentive.
Putting money into cleaning that up.
Yep.
Because that's the game we are playing, right? We are playing a game of Monopoly. Yeah, Monopoly where everyone is trying to figure out how many houses you can build and who gets all the money at the end.
Right.
But the problem with Monopoly is at the end, no one really wins. Even the person who won all of it, there's no one to play with him anymore.
That's true. You know, it's interesting because
the game ends, you know?
Yeah, the game ends. When you're talking about the game of money, and in fact, I'm looking back to how climate change was viewed 10, 15 years ago. You look in any political, in any elections, it was really not being discussed in any kind of sincere, deep way. And yet, since that time, industries have been forming. Solar industry, wind industry, energy efficiency industry, geothermal, to the point where it's employing a lot more people than even the dirty energy was. And so it now has a chance. And I think that could be why we're now seeing it manifest in politics. And our leaders or potential leaders are actually willing to talk about it. But at the same time, we're years behind in terms of eating animals. I see the most liberal candidates bragging because they feel like they have to about the burgers that they eat or the fact that my son is a hunter. And so I support gun rights. And it's something that it's like they have to live up to that level where we're willing to eat burgers. You know, there are manifestations of leaders who don't do that, like Cory Booker and other people who are pretty high up in government. But for the most part, even the most progressive are still eating animals. So I think we've got some years to go on that. And it can't be that many years, though, because the time has come. It needs to happen.
Right. The time is now. The time is now. So we don't have years because this is what coronavirus is telling us. Now is the time for these progressive leaders to step up and say it. And not pretend that they are, you know, that they are pro hunting, pro guns, pro meat,
yeah,
and things like that. Because the people, you see, even though the majority of people are still eating, they in the back of their minds know that there is something wrong.
Yeah.
They know that there is something wrong with what is happening. And they are looking to leaders for guidance, you know, for some feedback to say, yeah, what are you thinking in the back of your mind? That's correct. Right? And
exactly.
That's what you and I are doing now. But it's up to the mainstream leaders to also step up. If they don't, I mean, our group is going to get bigger and bigger, and we're going to just do this on our own. You know,
yep.
We have to do it from the grassroots.
Yep.
I think this movement is going to grow from the grassroots. It is already doing it. It's already shaking whole industries from the grassroots.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And
but
so,
there are now a lot of other industries who are being shaken by the coronavirus pandemic. So there is an opportunity for us to just reimagine things and not just continue doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
So that to me, it's about the new game. I talked about the new game, but it's also about a new story that we need to tell. See, the story that we tell of separation, that, you know, that we are superior to animals, right? We call ourselves Homo sapiens sapiens, which is the wise, wise primate.
Hmm.
I've never met a truly wise person who goes around saying, I'm wise, wise. I've never met someone who's wise who says he's wise, right? Or
no, what,
wise.
Well, Donald Trump does that.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, you're really not.
Case
right?
in point.
It's a case in point, right? So when we call ourselves that, we are telling a story of arrogance and narcissism.
Yeah.
You know, about putting ourselves way above all the other species. When in reality, we're just like any other species. And we do have a role to play in nature. So I call us the thermostat species. We've done a great job of it, by the way. But it is, you know, it's sort of, It happened even though we didn't know it. So I think nature is much smarter than we give her credit for. It's way smarter than we give her credit. And I think this coronavirus is part of our plan. You know, the plan is for us to wake us up, yeah, and help us become the thermostat species for the planet. Because we did a great job. You know, the Earth has gone through over 100 ice ages and interglacial periods over the last 3 million years. And in the current interglacial period, we started agriculture. And to do agriculture, we had to burn down forests. By burning down forests, we kept the temperature constant. So you hear, you know, Bill McKibben and others saying we had this remarkably constant temperature for the last 10,000 years, and then we burned fossil fuels and messed it up. Well, it was a remarkably constant temperature for the first 10,000 years because we burned down forests.
And that's a very interesting point.
Yeah, we did that as a species, okay? Unknowingly. We kept the temperature constant. And then over the last 200 years, we raised it by 1 degree Celsius. And in the process, we created all the tools and technologies we need to understand what we did. So the scientific knowledge had to be there for us to understand what we did. Mm-hmm. And now we have all the tools and technologies we need to become a conscious thermostat species. So we have to now cool the Earth by 1 degree Celsius. And we can do that by bringing back all the forests that we cut.
Sure.
And then we have to maintain the temperature for the rest of eternity. And then all the animals will thank us, right? Because we made a hospitable home for them where they don't have to ever experience an ice age again.
Right. If there are any animals left.
Well, we better stop killing them now.
Yeah.
And bring back the ones that that we lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a chance to do that. Yeah.
I hope so. We are a very, very scary species. If you look at us...
We're also a very creative species.
Yes.
We're a very inventive
species. We've got the potential.
Yeah, we have the potential.
If you look at...
And if you look at how fast the vegan movement has been growing, between 2014 and 2017, it increased in the U.S. by a factor of 7.
That's amazing.
Yep. So, if we just keep up that rate of increase by 2020... It is another factor of 7. By 2023, a factor of 49. And by 2026, a factor of 343. So at that rate, by 2026, the whole world will be vegan.
There we go.
We just keep that rate going. Right?
Which is one of your missions.
Yes, that's my mission, yeah.
How did you come up with that mission?
Well, I was talking to my granddaughter. I mean, actually, I was reading this report from the World Wildlife Fund, which is pretty depressing, showing how fast animals were being killed.
Yeah.
And I calculated that by 2026, we were on track to wipe them out. Okay? So I made that calculation, and I was very depressed about it. And I was reading a story to my granddaughter in bed. At the end of the story, she asked me, "Grandpa, who were the first human beings?" And I tried to explain to her about evolution. You know, I promised her that I will never, ever lie to her. Okay? So I said, "I'm going to tell you how it happened." So imagine that you're standing on the street and you're holding your mom by your hand and you ask your mom to bring her mom to stand by her side and so on. You create a long line of mothers on this side of the street. And on the other side of the street, you ask a chimpanzee to do the same thing with her mother and her grandmother and so on. By the time these two lines go from Phoenix to Tucson, they would merge. There'd be only one line. Both lines are going to say, "That's my mother too." Immediately she sat up in bed. She said, "What? Are you telling me that animals are my family?" And I said, "Now that you put it that way, yeah, they are your family." She said, then why are people eating my family? "Grandpa, make them stop. They're eating my family." She started bawling. And I felt as if my heart was being wrenched out of my chest. You know, so I didn't know how to calm her down. She was crying so much. And I said, "Kimaya, that's what I do. In fact, it's my job to make people stop." And she said, "This is your job? This is your job? You know you haven't done your job. When will you do your job?" And I said, "I have to do it by 2026, otherwise we are all in big trouble."
Wow.
And she said, "Promise?" I said, "Yeah, I'll promise you." She He said, will you give me a pinky promise? And I said, sure, I'll give you a pinky promise. And then she said, you can never, ever break a pinky promise. Mm. And then she went to sleep. So that's when I started the Vegan World 2026 project. I said, you know, we have to do this for our grandchildren, our children. This is our responsibility for my generation, responsibility to her generation, to create a world that is truly sustainable. Not a pretend sustainable world, a truly sustainable world. That people can live like that for the rest of creation if they wanted to. We have to imagine that world. We have to imagine all the processes that have to be put in place for that world. And we have to create it. And I started that project, and believe it or not, it just inspires people. People have come on board and they are putting their life into it. So we are working out all the questions. How do we create a system like that? A system of normalized nonviolence, as opposed to a system of normalized violence that we have today.
Yeah.
So what does that system look like? And I'm appealing to vegans to come join me. Let's imagine this. Let's create this. Because we all have our own gifts. I don't know everything. I just know, you know, I know I'm good at systems thinking. So I'm good at putting things together. But the details I need from people who have the expertise in those details. And then I think we can put these Lego blocks together to create this system of normalized nonviolence that could be our legacy for the next generation and generation to come. And I think this is what the generation is asking for. And this is why this virus affects our generation more than it affects their generation. It's giving us a message saying, you have to do this.
Yeah, great points. And yeah, you do learn something from everybody who joins the movements. And there's this saying that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And certainly, this movement has been maturing, and hopefully it's pulling together, and people are working together and more willing to give up their stake in it and create results that are bigger than they may have imagined.
Right. See, it's a, I think, timeline like that. Is it a timeline that John F. Kennedy put, saying, by the end of this decade, we're going to go to the moon, right? And it inspired the people of America. And we did achieve it by 1969, right? Within 7 years instead of 8 years after he made that speech.
Right.
So before the end of the 60s, man was on the moon. In the same way, I think putting a timeline like that, by 2026, we want a vegan world. Okay? That makes people work backwards and say, what should happen now for us to get to that vegan world by 2026? See, if it is the vegan world whenever, it's whenever, right? It's going to take its own time. So we don't have to do anything right now. It'll happen on its own. No, as an engineer, I know it doesn't happen on its own. We have to plan for it. We have to work for it. We have to imagine it. And we have to put things in place to make it happen.
Yeah.
This is how we did the internet. It didn't happen on its own. We had to work for it. We had to figure out every problem that was there and find solutions for each one of them. And so in our standards meetings, that's what we were doing. We were actually finding solutions for each one of these problems, and we were giving it away. So we wrote all these standards, and we gave it away. And people took our standards and started building things. With it. And believe it or not, when they built it, it worked. They said, oh, it works. Okay. This then became like a mark of quality for your product, to say that it was compliant with our standards.
Ah, right.
That's how the internet took off. Until then, until we did the standards process for the backbone of the internet, it was all, you know, people were coming up with their own ideas, and no one was really talking to anyone else. So it was
exactly,
all disjoint efforts, and they were all working at cross purposes.
It's good to have an engineer on the job.
Yeah, so when we did the standardization process, then we all got together and did it together. And then it became cohesive, and the internet took off, right? The same way, I think, we have the same capacity to create a vegan world. there are so many vegan organizations, and we are working sometimes at cross purposes. When we come together and say, we are going to come together around this one idea of creating a vegan world by 2026, then I think we have the potential to bring our gifts together and make it happen. And all of us want this to happen, right? As vegans, we want it to happen. We want the whole world to be vegan as quickly as possible.
Right. Absolutely. And you had a quote, and I'm looking for it now. Your quote is that if you say you would not deliberately hurt an innocent animal unnecessarily, by definition, you are vegan.
Right.
Going vegan is about coming home to who you are.
Right.
And we've talked about that countless times, that our values are all the same. So it's not a matter of persuading someone or asking someone to be a different person than they are. It's more manifesting who you are in the choices that you make.
Exactly. Yeah. It's aligning our choices with who we really are.
Yep. Pretty simple.
We already are.
Pretty simple. I think the time has come for a man like you, Dr. Rao, to be in this movement and have a voice that creates some objective and a way of getting there. Because again, that has not been happening. I think by nature, a lot of the people who are involved with telling people about these issues are more heart-oriented, or they're coming from a place where they just want to speak out and get it, say what they need to say and create changes. But a plan for that ultimate goal, I think, is really important, and the time has come.
Well, thank you for giving me the forum for it. You know, we need people like you as well to give me the voice. Otherwise, I'm just talking to my own room here, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are just about out of time, but I want to mention, since this show is about the coronavirus, that it's very interesting that the health conditions that put some people at much greater risk for serious implications, other than age, are themselves often caused by the very actions that caused the outbreak of this disease in the first place.
Right.
So it comes full circle. You know, we're creating all this damage to the world. As the result, we're getting back the disease that comes from our inappropriate interaction with nature. And as the result of taking those beings from nature, we are eating them and consuming them and causing the health problems that make us more susceptible to the disease that caused in the first place. So that is something, because you're talking about heart disease and diabetes, both related to eating of animals, and pretty easy to prevent and reverse in terms of a whole foods plant-based diet.
Right. You know, in fact, Dr. Esselstyn calls heart disease a toothless tiger. It's a foodborne illness. It was never treated. So if we just eat the right things, and your heart disease can reverse. The
right.
Same with diabetes, type 2 diabetes. So people have these 30-day reversal programs for heart disease and diabetes. Right? Get on it as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
Then, you know, you'll be less susceptible to the coronavirus, and we will have a much better world.
Yeah. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Dr. Rao, any final thoughts?
Well, thank you so much for this forum, Bob. I really appreciate it talking to you, and thank you for your wonderful questions as well. And I hope to hear more from your listeners. Join the Vegan World 2026 project.
Well, let's give you a website. That's www.climatehealers.org. That's www.climatehealers, that's HEALERS.org. It's an interesting site. I came across many interesting quotes, and your blogs are good. So I appreciate that. Dr. Rao, I've been doing speaking and education on this topic, specifically the topic about how our food and lifestyle choices impact our bodies and the world. And very specifically, we were some of the ones to start teaching about the impact of animal products on our bodies, on the world, and on the environment since 1990. So the people who are listening to this show are a lot of new people, because people are driving home and they've never heard of you or I before. But every time they do listen in, and it measures in the thousands and tens of thousands, they're hearing about this and they're hearing the sense that it makes. And so I think we can give us credit you and all the people that I've worked with and all the volunteers for creating the world that we're in now, which is more accepting of the word vegan and the concept of vegan, and seeing that there is a need to create alternative products to satiate that desire that we thought could only be filled by meat thus far. Really, these last few years have been breakthrough years with celebrities and people who predict the future and food organizations saying that vegan is the word of the year. So good job. And we've got to continue and now work on your plan for 2026.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. That is Dr. Shailesh Rao, Executive Director of Climate Healers, the author of two books, and an executive producer of four documentaries, including Cowspiracy, What the Health, and A Prayer for Compassion from 2019. Now, my name is Bob DiBenedetto. I want to thank you so much for listening to The Healthy Planet. I'll be with you again on Friday, April 10th at the same time. That's right, at 6 p.m. For more info on any Healthy Planet events, Healthy Planet in general, who we are, what we do, our website is www.healthyplanetusa.org. And our Facebook page is Healthy Planet USA, Healthy Planet USA. To get on our email list for all upcoming events, email us at info@healthyplanetusa.org. That's info@healthyplanetusa.org. And let's see, what else can we tell you? Well, we have some events planned, but because of what's going on, we don't know whether we're going to follow through on them. At this point, I'm assuming everything is going to be postponed to a later date. So we won't announce any of those. And at this point, I will also say that it does make sense to create some social distancing for a short period of time. I see some people talking about it as, I'm not going to fall to that fear mentality. It's not a fear mentality. This is a calculated effort to create an outcome, not based upon fear. Personally, I am very concerned with bringing it home to people who are much older than I am. And so don't give in to feeling like you're somehow a scared person, an inadequate person, you're unwilling to meet the world and you're going to close your life up. It's not that. It's that we're just coming up with a plan to make this go away faster and also to enable our society to handle it in a more efficacious way that won't leave us choosing between who to give care to. If we can possibly do that, we need to work together to make that happen. And so let's see if we can. But these are important weeks. It's also important to note that the coronavirus is somewhat like climate change. Look, what was our government's first response? Oh, it's not a big deal. Oh, it's not going to come here. Oh, it's under control. All not true. You know, just blatantly not true. What has been our government's response to climate change? Oh, not real. Oh, it's under control. Oh, it's not going to come here and create any problem. Well, the timeline for climate change is longer. We've seen the timeline for the coronavirus play out in a very short period of time, where there's so much information out from so many scientists, and the public pressure is getting intense that even those people who didn't want to admit it, like Donald Trump, have had to admit it. So it's not just a matter of protecting the numbers, like leave those people on the cruise ship because I don't want the numbers to go up in the United States. No, let's get those people off the cruise ship and help them get to a place where they're safe. That's the way we need to think of it. But also let's look at this as being very similar and parallel to how we're treating climate change. Our current governments, the people in office, are ignoring the reality that everybody else knows. All of our scientists, all of our best minds, we know where climate change is going. It is a scientific fact. And yet our government is still ignoring it. Well, it's up to us to keep the pressure on and tell them we need you to act. And that's happening. You know, it's happening by virtue of looking at what the young people on our planet are doing. Greta Thunberg and old people like me, just spreading this word and doing it to the degree that we can in any possible way. It can happen. But we've got to get these people out of office who are ignoring the truth. Because as Dr. Rao said, when you ignore the truth, nothing works. It simply doesn't work. It's not a judgment call. It's not a matter of a political party or partisanship. It's just that it does not work to ignore a blatant, important, and urgent scientific truth. It doesn't work for us. It doesn't work for our planet. It doesn't work for future generations. And it's an insult, really, to those of us who can think, which is all of us, the great majority of us who can think without succumbing to political pressure or economic pressure, as Dr. Rao pointed out. When people are getting paid by big industries that are in favor of keeping us in the dark, they will continue to push for keeping us in the dark. So those people need to be voted out, regardless of which political party they're with. And on that note, I'm going to leave. Good luck, everybody. Stay clear of the fear. Here's a quote for you. Worrying doesn't take away tomorrow's problems. It takes away today's peace. So I'm not saying to worry. I'm just saying let's act in a coordinated way. When I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives and The Healthy Planet shows every week at this time with great hosts that will share cutting-edge health and environmental information. That's Fridays at 6 p.m. Until next time, stay strong, keep moving, relax, make your voice heard in this world by speaking up for what's right. Keep to yourself a little bit more and let's solve this together and enjoy this beautiful world that we all share. Good night.